get started. I'd like to welcome you to your interview and share with you a little bit about how we'll proceed. We'll have an opportunity for you to provide opening remarks, and then the council members will have an opportunity to ask you questions about anything and everything. We welcome your open and candid responses. We want to get to know you as much as you get to know us. And then about 5 minutes, 5 to 7 minutes toward the end, we'll give you an opportunity to do some closing remarks. Do you have any questions for us?
No, that's fine.
Okay. Well, I'd like to invite you to introduce yourself and provide your opening statement.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to be here today, and thank you, Pat, for inviting me. A little background on myself. I'm born and raised in Kensington, Minnesota. Kensington, 308 people, at least it was when I graduated. A little smaller now. His claim to fame is that it's where the runestone was found in west central Minnesota. Born on a farm. The runestone, where the Vikings claimed to come to Minnesota in the year 1362. I went to North Dakota State, got my bachelor's degree in ag engineering, and ended up in Mankato about 32 years ago. I started a software company there. Married to Linda. We're going to have our 40th anniversary this year. I have two daughters, Rachel and Ann, and two granddaughters. So, a great family. I lived in the Waterville area. I live on a lake. There's a whole series of lakes in southern Minnesota, if you don't know. Very nice. And my company's located in Mankato, but I can live out on a lake. I've been in business my entire career, and primarily in the software business. And I had three companies I want to talk about so you get an idea as to my background. The first was called CWC. We started in Mankato. I was the first person. We started from scratch. And we ended up creating a $100 million company. This was in software. I created 700 jobs. Jobs were in Minnesota. We had several offices. We had offices in Detroit and Amsterdam and Dusseldorf and Korea and many other places. I did international work, so I got some international experience. Did an IPO, so I've had the experience of going through the public offering and seeing your company traded on NASDAQ. During that time, I worked a lot with University of Minnesota at Mankato, helping them set up the intern program. This is way back. There was no intern program. And so Glenn Taylor's companies and ours were looking to keep more of the tech talent in Mankato, and they created an intern program. I've got about 30 patents to my name, so I'd like to describe myself as an inventor. Second company was two professors out of University of Minnesota, Mankato, and they developed some e-learning software. And I worked with them, and we developed that company called Anlon. And so I got some good experience in software around education. And the third company, which is what I'm working on today, and we're focused on software to help farmers. And farmers have a wealth of data, and they don't know what to do with it. They're not getting the real value from it. So we want to help them. And about 2 years ago, we started using drones to fly over fields and actually detect nitrogen stress, plant stress, and the like. So we're having a lot of fun with it. It's really some leading edge technology. Some of the questions that you had on your statements were fiduciary responsibilities. We started a company from scratch, so you have to set up the budgets, you do it on a shoestring, you create every policy, you create every budget. You have to manage investors, you got to manage priorities, you got to be creative along the way, and I've had a chance to experience all of that. There are certain things I think that I could bring to the Board of Regents, and other things I probably can't, but there are several things I'd like to highlight. One is I would have a focus on agriculture. And agriculture's got to be the leading industry in the state of Minnesota. It's and it's going to become more important. We've got to double food production by 2050. And so there's going to be a lot more technology. And then we've got climate change going on. We've got regulatory issues, so it's going to be a tougher environment also. And we start talking about the environment. You've got to be talking about agriculture. Agriculture is the biggest user of water, a lot of pollution and runoff and issues like that. I was out to Silicon Valley several times and with the financing on my companies. You know, Silicon Valley, all the major VCs have now set up an agricultural practice, and they would never do that before. They used to consider the Midwest flyover country. So a lot of more interest is going to be in ag, and with the reputation of Borlaug and what he did in the past, we really should be growing that, I think, much more aggressively. The second is technology. I'm not talking about biotech and that type of technology, but IT. and that's the area that I've got my expertise. And that goes across all industries, whether it's healthcare or education. And I can only imagine the role of IT is going to have in education as we go forward. It's going to change the way we operate, and I'd like to be a driver to help make that happen. Entrepreneurial science, or whatever we'd like to call it. University of Minnesota is one of the top 10 colleges for research. There's so many ideas that can come out of this college, and we can use it to create businesses and get in the university ideas. IP, intellectual property. Used to be all about physical assets. Now it's intellectual property, and I have a great deal of experience on how do you get intellectual property, how do you license it, how do you fund it, in other words, how do you monetize it. International, which I mentioned before, not commodities, but IP. And then robotics. I was a speaker at the MennDrive conference last spring, and we're talking about drones, and drones is one kind of robotics, and with Minnesota's emphasis on robotics, it's another area I could add some expertise. So I think I can bring some unique skills, unique focus, and experiences to the board, and I've got the energy and desire to do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Pat, I believe you had question one, and then Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you for those opening comments and opening remarks, and we've got a lot to follow up on here. So, but one of the things I'd like to follow up on is in doing reference checks, you supplied me with some great references, but because of networking, I spiderwebbed on out beyond that. One of the references made a remark, and I would like to give you an opportunity to respond to it. And it specifically involves, I think, your latest company and the potential for shareholder dissatisfaction. And there was a remark made, and it was, at this point, I'm going to label it as strictly hearsay, but we want to bring it out in the open. Is there anything from a litigation standpoint, or is there anything with potential shareholder action in the your new company? And share with us what you can.
No, there's not. There is nothing. What we're doing with this company is we're using big data like they do use in healthcare. We use it in agriculture, and it's hard. And it's really some difficult technology. We're making good progress. We did not make as much progress as last year. So we are in the process of selling the company. We want to get the company in better finance. We want to get it in the hands of somebody that's got pockets. A Pioneer, a Monsanto, a Cargill, or somebody of that sort. So we've taken it as far as we think we can. But we get numerous letters from shareholders that says, don't give up, this is hard, this is important, I'd like to be a part of it. But we do have some that would like to, we didn't quite live up to our expectations.
Follow up. How many shareholders are there? Is that public information? I mean, I know you're a private company, but what's the scope of this business that you can publicly talk about?
Yeah, we're a private company, and so I'm probably 60%. We have an investor from Houston, Texas, that is in the 30s. Then we have a group of farmers and friends and family in the Mankato area, primarily in the Mankato area. Some of them go over to South Dakota. There's maybe, I guess on this 20. It's not 15, there's not 5. It's about in the 20 area.
Jerry, and then Paul. Bert.
Madam Chair, Mr. Johnson, on that topic, without getting into any confidentiality, is there any possibility of some litigation bursting forth within the next year?
Anybody can file at any time. So I don't think so, but it could.
Jerry?
Actually, I got two questions. First, is that room zone real?
Oh,
I read some histories.
Yeah, in fact, the most recent articles on public TV have said now that it's more real than it used to be. So it goes through ups and downs. It's very, very real, and then not so real.
Okay, then maybe a little bit more to the topic. You mentioned that you built business up to $100 million.
The first one I did, yes.
And now we're talking about a business that's $3.5 billion, the University of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. What sort of comments or ideas might you have? How do we continue to improve finance status, and you know, how do we gain revenue to continue to build on the university?
Well, one of the things you have to do when you're a startup, you get into the creativity and you come up with creative ways. I clearly do not understand University of Minnesota financing. I've not studied it. I've not been a part of that. But you're going to be creative, and you're going to come up with new approaches. Second thing is, I think there's an opportunity in licensing. I've seen the work that the University of Wisconsin and Madison has done. They've done focused on biotech, but it's created a wonderful stream of revenue for them also. And then going out and talking to investors and getting people fired up and sold on the company and on the university, pardon me. And I'm sure there's a tremendous, large group of alumni that would be willing to participate too. So I don't have an answer. I haven't studied it, but it would be creative. I would look first into some of the intellectual property and licensing.
Thank you.
Lois, did you have something?
Yes, on the intellectual property licensing, not asking you, not directing your answer, but it's a flow forward from that. You referenced entrepreneurial science. You are a resident of Greater Minnesota all of your life. We talk about the University of Minnesota being a or the driver of the Minnesota economy. How would you see the institution as being able to increasingly utilize that driver capacity to enhance the economies of Greater Minnesota? Perchance looking at that answer with a segment of it addressing the entrepreneurial science area, but not all of it necessarily addressing it.
I would start off with some of the research that's being done and being able to monetize that or create businesses around that. It's not the University of Minnesota, but it's University of Minnesota Mankato. When I was starting my company, we were having a hard time finding employees. And for most companies, having employees is a key part. It's number one. And we were working with University of Minnesota Mankato State at that time. And their professors were telling the students, if you want a real career in technology, you need to go to the West Coast or East Coast and leave the area. And we didn't think that was right. We thought that we had great opportunities in Mankato. So we had to work with the university to try to help them better understand that there was opportunities right in their backyard, which they didn't even realize, and being able to attract a lot of the local smart talent that's right in our backyard. I was out to see a venture capital company out in Fire Perkins. It's considered the biggest one out in California. And one of their partners came from Fairmont, Minnesota, and she developed email systems for cell phones and sold it after about 3 years of operation for hundreds of millions of dollars. And that talent was right there in Fairmont and it got away from us. So I think there's a lot of talent there. We've got to give them an opportunity. They've got to see there's good opportunity in rural areas. And I really believe that strongly. It's very, I'm in the IT world, so I deal with banks in Mankato, and I'm the only one IT that's dealing with them. So it's very difficult. You go in and you ask for loans or debts, and what's your assets? What's intellectual property? It's patents. And I think there's a lot of education that needs to be done with the financial organizations too and the investment community. They're very willing to finance a tractor or some land, but not so much in our area. And people and money are going to drive this. People, money, and ideas. So.
Thank you. Joey?
You, Madam Chair, you mentioned a lot of information technology could be affecting the University of Minnesota and education, of course, as we know it. What are some challenges and changes that you could see coming before the university due to the increasing relevance of information technology?
I have some experience in that because we developed Anlon, an e-learning company, for a while. I would say that the biggest issue was institutional resistance, and many of the faculty felt that we were creating technology to eliminate jobs, and rather than technology to help them do better. So there was a great deal of receptivity by the students, not so much faculty. So, again, more education needs to occur. So, institutional resistance.
Thank you. Senator Bonoff?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Johnson, I think you bring, you know, wonderful skills in terms of your entrepreneurial bent, your knowledge of the IT role, the, you know, your ability to secure patents. All of that is very, very attractive when we look at where the university needs to go. So when we ask the questions about this one business initiative, personally, my own family business was in a situation where capital, access to capital, caused it to close its doors. So, again, none of this is judgmental, but we just want to understand the risks. So are there, do you project there will be ill will towards you in the next year or two that could actually then put a cloud over the university should you be a regent if that were to come public? I just wanted to ask directly.
I think it could be possible.
Yep.
It depends upon how we sell the company.
Okay.
And if the investors do well, then everything's fine. If we don't do well, then it's not. So,
yeah.
We're working hard on getting that done right now. But we dug ourselves a hole doing this new technology, and I think we've created something very valuable. But the it's not played out completely yet, so we'll have to see how that goes.
Thank you.
Starting up a company, you got a lot of highs and you got a lot of lows.
Absolutely. So one follow-on, just with regard to Joe's question, institutional resistance as part of a governance board, how would you see your role in overcoming institutional resistance?
It's a great question. The way I generally try to overcome that is through try to create a vision as to where what things are going to look like, and so they can see that what we're doing here, where it might end up. I've created things like paper prototypes and mock-ups and design and things like that to help me communicate. I think it's going to be nothing but great opportunity for technology and education. It's one of the big opportunities in the future, and I've got to find a way to help the faculty to be receptive to it.
Thank you.
Margaret?
On the essay questions, question four was, what are the most important issues confronting the University of Minnesota, and how would you contribute to solving them? Your first sentence is, I'm not in a position at this time to understand the most important issues facing a university. Why are you applying for regent at the University of Minnesota?
It's a great question. I feel that I can add some. I'm not going to try to come across as an expert as to what's going on within the university. I would have to take my time. I'd have to listen and learn. I don't think it's good when people come in and claim to know more than they maybe know. But I do believe, just being on the fringe and on the outside and watching that, this whole idea of, you know, intellectual property, entrepreneurship, agriculture can be much, much higher emphasis. And that's where I'd like to spend my time and energy.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. It's been 30 days since you wrote that statement, December 5th, January 5th. Who have you talked to that provided the most insight about the University of Minnesota? What was your level of curiosity when you got the call that says you're in?
Back in my prior company, Rudy Perpich had a program. It was called Capital for a Day, and it was trying to get the legislatures out of his cabinet outside of the St. Paul area. And Mankato was Capital for a Day. And the city fathers had to find two companies then to take the governor and staff to. Well, we were working, and we made a big impression. After Rudy was defeated for governor, he worked for me. And he worked for me for a number of years, and when you hire Rudy, you get Rudy, Lola, and Mary Sue and Nick and get the whole family. It's a wonderful, wonderful family. He taught me a lot about the university and what the university. He believed so strongly in it. And he talked to, when we were going out, we were trying to sign up companies like Renault and IBM. He always would look for the highest ranking Minnesotan in each one of these companies. And he would help open some doors. I would say it was Rudy Perpich and his energy and drive and of course, he was a strong proponent of rural development also. I was very proud to spend my time with him. I got to be his pallbearer, and I developed a great relationship with him. We spent many, many, many hours together.
The question was, who have you talked to from...
Back then. Nobody recently.
All right. That was my question.
Nobody recently.
Thank you. Paul?
I'm going to dive into the weeds, and I apologize to most of you here. You talked earlier about helping to establish an internship program at MSU Mankato, working with Glenn Taylor. I've gotten to know Marty Hebig, who has started Maverick Software that connects undergraduate students in IT fields with large employers. And I'm wondering if that name rings a bell with you. That's part of the being in the weeds. But beyond that, how would you see yourself as a regent in a governance role helping to strengthen those types of opportunities for undergraduate students across all of the campuses in having meaningful work experiences? And how could you leverage what you've learned in the IT field with some of the broader opportunities for internships?
I don't know if I have a specific answer for that, other than if you go out and try to hire IT people right now, it's very difficult. It's very difficult, and it's harder yet in the Mankato area. We used internship as a wonderful way to recruit students and show them what we could do as a company, and then we're able to retain them. It was especially effective if Grandma and Grandpa lived in the area, so there were some roots in the area. But creating the real-time jobs that are meaningful and contributing, and some of you that as a build of my own experience.
Thank you.
It was nice in Mankato, too, because these interns weren't summer interns. They got to be interns all year long, and many of them got thrust into, some of them were traveling to Europe to meet with clients. Some of them were creating some pretty sophisticated software also. So meaningful jobs, I think, is also important.
Thank you. Ardell?
Thanks, Madam Chair, and Mr. Johnson. Thank you. I'm on the Minnesota State Arts Board, so I come with this question from there. The feeling is that the humanities are not seen as important anymore as they once were. What do you believe the role of humanities or the arts play in the education of all students at the University of Minnesota?
I think they're important, and I can only speak to it from my daughter went out east to go to school and got a liberal arts degree. She now is working with me doing patents, and I can see every day her skills coming forward. But to be truthful, I spent most of my time in the technology arena.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. Kind of almost a follow-up, or Ardell's was a great lead-in. Jerry, certainly in your application and your work experience, you are very, very strong as far as understanding technology, that integration. Help us as a council understand how good a student you will be in understanding, for instance, maybe issues with the medical school or arts and humanities issues or a broad range of perspectives that the Board of Regents has to deal with.
That's a great question. I'm going to be a voracious reader. I'm going to learn, but it's going to be new areas for me to get into that I have not developed the skills. I saw one of the qualifications for the Board of Regents was to represent not one person or one department, but the entire campus. And I would have to work hard to do that. That's not where my natural gravitation is.
Mm-hmm. Jerry?
Somewhat of a follow-up to Pat's question, Madam Chair and Mr. Johnson, is a significant part of the budget and of the production of the universe is involved around the healthcare industry. And you being from Greater Minnesota, how do you see the university's involvement in producing personnel or its involvement in the healthcare of the general citizens of the state?
Well, we're we're blessed in Mankato with the Mayo system being there in Mankato. But I don't have an answer for you on that.
Melissa?
You are an entrepreneur. You have your finger on probably the fastest moving industry in the globe. And in order to be successful in it, you're looking probably at, all practical purposes, 10 to 20 year horizons perpetually. How do you envision yourself taking your keenness of mind and your 10 to 20 year perpetual horizon and working inside an environment of a massive ship that moves slowly as a board of directors? A ship that needs your 10 to 20 year horizon, but yet still moves slowly. How do you envision your strength and your personality operating in that environment?
When you're talking 10 to 20 years, I assume in agriculture that would be around genetics and crops, diseases, research, and things like that.
No, I'm talking about you. Your success in business and your success in your field has mandated that you look ahead, and your success with CWC, et cetera, right, means you know how to do that, and you do it well, and you've given three examples of it. So that's your DNA as a person. You put a keen mind to it, and you put that DNA. And so you're now using it or bringing it to a governance environment of a big ship that needs that foresight, but yet that moves slowly. So how do you envision yourself operating in that environment?
That is interesting question and challenge. I do believe in the IT world, things happen quite quickly, as opposed to some other parts of agriculture. We were marching along, and all of a sudden the Internet wasn't even there until, 12 years ago, 13 years ago, and look what happened. Google wasn't there one day, and the next day they are. Facebook wasn't one day, and then they are. So some of these things, I think, are going to cause some changes to occur faster than has been occurring in more traditionally. So I think technology is going to help us in some of that area. And I remember back in the day when I first started my company in 83, I was trying to explain to people what a PC was, what a hard disk was, and all those kinds of questions. And now everybody's got cell phones. They're so interconnected. They've got all these Twitters. They've got all these different ways of communicating. I would like to believe that we're going to start moving a little bit faster. I think an excellent... One of the things I like to do is... some people say I'm creative. I don't know if I am, but I like to listen to people. You go out and talk to people, and they'll tell you what you need to do. I think the wonderful University of Wisconsin-Madison with their bio-research park, I think, is excellent. Mark Beer set that up and worked with it. Or going out to Silicon Valley and Stanford, you know, that success was largely came out of one or two companies. And now you drive on the edge of the campus and it's Sand Hill Road, it's all the VCs are. But some success caused other things to occur. I hope things start moving on faster, at least in some areas.
Thank you. Dan, and then Jim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Johnson, this isn't unique to the University of Minnesota, but one of the biggest issues nationally in higher education is the issue of affordability and how much it costs to go to college. As a member of the Board of Regents, how would you approach that? I mean, what would your priorities be from affordability? How do you solve the problem?
It's a huge problem. We just got to keep the cost of tuition down or come up with creative programs to provide financing and not end up with the students in debt. I'm not sure I've got anything to add on that right now.
Thank you. Jim?
Madam Chair, Mr. Johnson, you spoke of, Lois spoke of long-term time frames. 12 years is a long time. And most successful regions that have gone through this process and across the street and then and have been reelected have have been willing to and done a made a commitment to a 12-year term. Is that something that certainly you've committed to and you've applied for the 6-year term? But assuming everything goes accordingly, does that seem like too long a commitment you're willing to make, or are you prepared to make that today if everything falls out?
I'm prepared to make that. As long as I'm contributing and making a difference, I would enjoy that. I would enjoy the mental stimulation. I would enjoy the challenge, the leadership. I would enjoy it.
Thank you.
Especially if I get my company sold now, then I can spend more time on that.
Oh, you'll just start another one.
Bert?
Madam Chair, Mr. Johnson, you come across as a big picture guy and someone who has been successful looking down the road when it comes to IT and what's coming. Could you talk out loud for us a little bit about how you might employ that ability and skill relative to the University of Minnesota or to Regents as to what might be coming down the road or how you might approach a function like that?
I do it with what I call prototypes, paper prototypes. I do it with vision statements or documents for not statements, but talk about what can be and how we can make things work. Pat's been in my office. He's seen how I do that. I get an idea, and I start working with it, and I start working with this guy and this guy and this guy, and each time I talk to him, I refine it. And that helps me articulate the story. I like to also think I'm a storyteller. So it's telling stories and listening and being able to create a vision, a kind of vision, and being able... my old company was called Clear with Computers, and it wasn't maybe a very creative name, but I thought the hardest thing in life is to communicate. And communicate so somebody understands. And I wanted to be able to communicate. My tool was a computer, the tool that I was learning. But communication's hard. And sometimes you think you're on the same page with somebody, and it's obvious you're not. So I'm trying to employ these various techniques to try to get everybody, get myself and others on the same page.
Madam Chair, quick follow-up. Well, we have talked this morning about various issues facing the University of Minnesota. How would you employ the techniques you've talked about in your office relative to the big picture future of the University of Minnesota? Can you tie those two things together as how you might function as a region on issues based on the experience you have?
The way I would do it is, I assume I'll do it the same way as I'm doing it now. I'll talk to customers, which are students. I'll talk to businesses. I would try to listen to what they're telling me and solicit ideas. Take all these various things, put them together into with my own background and filters, and come up with a solution. And also going out and benchmarking other leading organizations. I just believe that that's such a key thing to do. I have a brief story, and I thought it was I sat on the airplane one day and had a price there, head of manufacturing. And so we just admire Toyota. They can build the best cars, and they do it so great. So they'd sit in their meetings at Chrysler and say, how are we going to learn more about what Toyota does? Well, why don't you call them? Called them up. Brought them down and gave them a tour and showed them how they build cars. So I think going out there and asking questions and soliciting ideas, but getting from many people and then pulling them together.
That's one my more skill. Follow-up. Well, can you tie that approach that you've talked so eloquently about to some specific issues at the University of Minnesota as you see them playing out over the years? Not the technique, but what's the issue?
Well, I think around the use of IT within the college, within education, and I think also the expansion of the role in agriculture, how does the University of Minnesota leverage this big wave that's coming forward, and that'd be another key area. Robotics, big area. Drones, UAVs, again, they're all fairly technical in nature, but some of those skills is where I would think I could bring the greatest value.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask the next question. You mentioned big data in your opening, right. And I'm wondering two things. One, can you give us a 30-second elevator speech on what big data is? I'm very familiar with it, but I'm not sure that everyone is. And second of all, how would your knowledge of big data help you as a regent, and how might the university utilize big data? I am not 100% confident in how it's being used today, and I understand that, that you don't have that knowledge either, but I'm interested in your perspective on that.
In Target's example, big data is profiling customers to better understand what they're buying, when they're buying, at time of day. There's just so much wealth of information that they can better run Target by doing so. Some of it's being done by Facebook and Google as they serve up information. Just huge, huge databases. The area I'm dealing with is agriculture. And I consider agriculture to be, you might think this is funny, but very similar to healthcare. Plants and animals both have DNA and both get sick, both need water, both are male and female. And there's just a wealth of data out there around weather and soils and crops and history. And there's more research papers than you can imagine at the University of Minnesota that are sitting there. So it's a matter of bringing all these things together and providing some real insight to someone like Pat in agriculture. So it's bringing much more data together than it's ever been brought together before. I think Google just did an outstanding job of that when they... It must be the first place everybody goes. You know, they brought all these various things together. But it's taken it further than that. It's actually given some insight as to what's going on.
Thank you. Ardell?
I have a question on a list of questions here. But describe your understanding of academic freedom and the issues that surround it.
Might be a bit of a guess, but academic freedom is the ability for the faculty to instruct their course the way they want to, teach it the way they want to, versus something else that's much more structured.
Thank you.
I think that's one of the reasons maybe why there's some institutional resistance on some of these.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Johnson, you've been a manager, an entrepreneur, very hands-on in driving success. The role of a regent is much different in being on the board of directors and more governance-related. Can you talk about your leadership style and maybe some of the experiences that you've had previously and how those would translate to your work on the board, say, versus as a hands-on leader?
I am hands-on. And my first company, I think that we created a $100 million company. If I would have been a better person to delegate, it would have become 10 times that. And if you are too hands-on or try to do too much yourself without being the leader, things fall short. So I've learned those lessons. I believe I don't want to get involved with running the university. I've been there, done that in my own little scale here. But I think my role could be one of policy, one of bringing forward ideas and working in that kind of environment and bringing it forward to the appropriate people.
Follow up to that. In looking at your application, your employment history almost mirrors your governing experience because the first three categories, your CEO and founder of both the company and the board, what is your most meaningful non-company governance experience? Because at least on this form, it would say 95 to 2000 with the Grace Lutheran Church.
I think from an academic perspective, Governor Doyle appointed me in Wisconsin to be on the Wisconsin Technology Council, and it was a council that was to promote technology development in rural areas. I was on their board, and I was led their education committee. That would be one. I was the founder of the Mankato Area Council for Quality. In Mankato, we're trying to compete more globally, and we thought that having quality, so we set up the Council for Quality back 25 years. We set our 25th anniversary. Maybe from an institution, those two. And then
okay.
Thank you. We have time for maybe one more question. Pat?
Jerry, I have a history with you, so I have seen your passion. Many applicants come before this board with a strong passion for the university, and they practically bleed maroon and gold. Share with us what your passions are.
I am not that well connected to the university. I am much more connected to Mankato, and my wife went to Concordia College in Moorhead. I went to North Dakota State, so I gravitated towards athletics. My limits have been some interaction with David Mulla and the folks up at Agronomy and Agriculture. We've done a little bit of recently with some of the robotics. I believe strongly in the university. I have not had that much engagement over my career, to be truthful.
Thank you. Well, we are about 5 minutes before the end of our time together, and I'd like to invite you to share your closing remarks with us.
I didn't prepare anything. I think hopefully you can see my strengths and my weaknesses as to what I could bring. I think that I could bring some unique skills to the Board of Regents, especially in the area of agriculture, technology, IT. I think I could bring some creativity. I can apply that creativity to fundraising, to business development. I think we can do a lot in the area of intellectual property. Intellectual property in this college is going to be one of the big drivers, and how do you take and use that as a resource of revenue? And I think I could do that. So, appreciate the opportunity to come up, and we've had an open dialogue as to what we can and cannot do.
Thank you very, very much for your time.
Thank you so much.